SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to the Early Line on Sports Grid on Sirius XM, Channel 204. I'm Aaron Dolan, joined by my co-host, Kevin Walsh. Happy Wednesday to our viewers and listeners. We're going to get to our 7-7 top headlines, kicking it off with soccer. The English Premier League clubs are making a quick U-turn from the proposed European Soccer League. All of England has pulled out, and apparently, Kev, there's some new breaking news.
Yeah, so we're hearing now from founder of this league and the chairman of Juventus, Andrea Agnelli. He does not believe that the Super League can go on without the English clubs and their presence in this league. He no longer believes that this is a viable project, and it appears that this thing is now officially done. What does that mean for Juventus, Real Madrid, and Barcelona, who I believe are now the only three that have yet to release official statements that they are gone? The Milans again released their official statements. What does it mean for them? Do they try to come back to UEFA? Do they see if it's viable without? I'm not sure. But again, some big news there. The founder of this league saying without these English clubs, all six of them pulling out, this is no longer a viable project.
Yep, and if anything else breaks within the next hour, Kevin and I will be sure to update you there. Also, another top headline, James Harden is out indefinitely. He experienced what the Nets are calling a setback in his hamstring rehabilitation after an on-court rehab session on Monday. Harden has missed the Nets the past six games, but the Nets do remain the favorites to win the title at plus 220 on the FanDuel Sportsbook.
One of the most durable players in the league, James Harden. So this is surprising. And of the Nets' big three, he's the one you count on being out there the most, realistically. Yep. Kyrie doesn't have a great injury history. Plus, again, if we're honest, could he possibly miss a game? It feels like that. Durant, it's been apparent for years now how injury-prone he is. It's unfortunate. It's a reality. Now James Harden banged up as well. A lack of confidence could be there for folks betting in the futures market that they're going to have their full group of guys available come playoff times for full playoff series, and that would be worrisome if you're laying or taking short numbers on this team in the futures market.
Yeah, and worrisome, like you mentioned in the first hour, Kev, that this team, the trio there, is only going to play for less than 10 games. Also, another headline, Clippers sneak past the Trailblazers, winning 113-112 thanks to Paul George's late free throws to lift the red-hot Blazers. Clippers 14-3 in their past 17 games.
Yeah, look, PG's playing incredible basketball. When Kawhi and PG are on the court together, they're nearly impossible to beat. But no Kawhi for them tonight, no problem. Paul George closes the deal. I know the Blazers were missing Lillard, and they probably would have gotten the job done had they had Dame. But they had a lead. They couldn't close it out. And the Clippers were really fired up with this win. You saw that. A lot of high fives, a lot of, you know, little shoulder shrugs there. This is a potential first round Western Conference preview. It feels like the Clippers were excited to maybe send a message to the Blazers with that victory.
Yeah, and as for Kawhi Leonard, his injury update here, the Clippers star is reportedly dealing with right foot soreness. He's going to be reevaluated in just 1 week.
If you're somebody that's holding a Clippers future ticket, I wouldn't worry too much about this Kawhi news, at least not yet. I worry about his durability at times, so I don't need him playing every single day in the regular season. The chemistry is built up with Paul George now over a full two seasons together. You just want to make sure that he is right. I think early May, we'll see Kawhi back out there for a couple of games here, but all in all, not too much to worry about, at least yet, with Kawhi.
Yep, and quickly want to welcome in our radio audience. You're listening to the Early Line on Sports Grid on Sirius XM, Channel 204. For Kevin Walsh, I'm Aaron Dolan. Now, the Nationals place Juan Soto on a 10-day injury list with a strained left shoulder. This is another blow for the Nationals, who own a 6-9 record right now.
Yeah, but you know what? They did get the job done yesterday. Unfortunate right now to see Soto go to the IL, the NL MVP market right now being defined by injury early season, but a nice 3-2 come from behind victory against the St. Louis Cardinals at home. They need to put some results like this together because it's going to be hard now losing your best player, a player in Juan Soto that some believe is the best Major League Baseball has to offer.
Yep, and also in Major League Baseball, the Brewers' right-hander Corbin Burnes just broke a Major League Baseball record, 40 strikeouts and counting, no walks. He struck out six of the first nine Padres batters he faced yesterday. This sets a record for a starting pitcher.
Yeah, just tremendous stuff from Burnes, rocketing up the board for NL Cy Young odds. Now comfortably the second choice on a tier closer to DeGrom than, say, Trevor Bauer, who is behind him, which really speaks volumes because Bauer's been off to a good start, but Burnes has been sensational for the Milwaukee Brewers.
Yes, in our last headline, we have the Pittsburgh Steelers announced a three-year contract extension for Mike Tomlin. The contract runs through the 2024 season. Tomlin will enter his 15th season leading the Steelers, the third longest tenured coach currently in the NFL. Tomlin is the Steelers' third coach since the 1969 season.
It's incredible, again, just that they don't, you know, go through coaches like this the way that everybody else does. It's a smart thing. Also, though, now, with this being locked up here, how does that change the mindset for Mike Tomlin coming into the NFL draft? More likely to take a win-now player? Could he want a project? Are the Steelers a sneaky quarterback team in round one, round two? I think those are the other things now that we need to consider as we're getting closer to the NFL draft.
Yeah, and we'll be talking about the NFL draft towards the end of the show. Stay with us here on the Early Line. We'll be right back after the break.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Happy Wednesday. Welcome back to the Early Line. In golf this week, we have the Zurich Classic. So we want to throw it over to Rick Gaiman to give us a course preview.
The PGA Tour heads to TPC Louisiana for the Zurich Classic this week, and this is the one, the only official team event that we get on the PGA Tour each and every year. That's right. Since the format changed in 2017, each golfer is paired with another golfer. There are 80 pairs, so that's 160 golfers, and they will alternate between rounds of four ball and four sums. Now, four ball, that is when every player plays their own ball. Each member of the team takes whatever score that they make. And then the lowest score is that team score for each hole. So if golfer A makes a birdie and golfer B makes a bogey, that team takes golfer A's birdie. So you're going to see some really low scores out there over the course of the week. And then, of course, in four sums, that is more commonly known as alternate shot. So each member of the team is going to tee off on half of the holes. And if golfer A hits shot one, then golfer B hits shot two, golfer A hits shot three, so on and so forth until they have a score for their team for each and every hole. What we've seen over the years is that this event does tend to allow some long shots to contend. There is a lot of volatility. There is a ton of variance in this format. We've seen three different team winners, but our defending champions, they were the chalk. They were the favorites. John Rahm and Ryan Palmer in 2019, because this event was not held in 2020. So a lot of different things to consider for this week with the format, with the teams, and everything else that's going to go on at this week's Zurich Classic.
And Kev, like Rick said, a lot of things to take into consideration, especially since this is the team event, the only one in the PGA Tour, 80 pairs of four ball. So something to keep in mind, obviously you'll be betting a little bit differently as opposed to some of the just regular tournaments.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's pretty cool, though. I like the idea. Little different change of pace there. Obviously, you know, you're straight 1v1v1v1v1 is the way this sport is built. But, you know, team golf is quite fun. I don't know why I watch a lot of, you know, YouTube videos of people doing those four-man scrambles. I know that's not exactly what this is, but a great job by Rick kind of laying out the format here. And, I mean, that's absolutely just kind of betting 101. know what you're betting on. If you're somebody that's been playing around on this golf board, you know, week in, week out, you show up, you're like, wait a minute, why is it Rahm / Palmer? Are you giving me two golfers? What's the deal? Little team format here. I think that's pretty cool.
Yep, and right now we have Rahm and Palmer at plus 700. Of course, like Kevin said, making the great point, if you go on, it's not that you can bet on both these players. It's because it is a team event. Let's ask Rick about this pair.
The defending champions John Rahm and Ryan Palmer enter as the favorites again this week. They are 6-1, and they deserve it. I think that very clearly by any metric, this is the team to beat. John Rahm is one of the top players in the world. Anytime that you compare him with basically any golfer, he is going to be one of the favorites. And Ryan Palmer has had an unbelievable amount of success in this event. He had a top five with Jordan Spieth a couple of years ago. And then, of course, the victory with John Rahm last year. And now, in that time frame, since we've played this event, this is the best Ryan Palmer's ever been. This is the best official world golf ranking he's ever had. He's contending on a regular basis. So that makes this Rahm and Palmer team even more formidable this time around. But after saying all of that, I still don't think it's bettable at 6-1. I mean, those are really incredibly short odds. And this format with the foursomes, with the four ball, the alternate shot that we're going to get for two rounds, it creates a lot of volatility. There's a lot of things that can go sideways very quickly. A lot of it, quite frankly, is just luck or randomness. You know, if you and your partner in four ball, if you and your partner each make eight birdies, you might do it on the same hole, and it might not be as valuable on if you made eight birdies on eight different holes and each of you tally 16 birdies. I mean, there's a luck factor heavily weighted into this as well. So for me, it's too short of a number for me to be able to bet them at, but they are certainly well deserved of this price.
And Kev, always great insight from Rick. Now we have Rahm and Palmer plus 700 on the FanDuel Sportsbook, as well as Schauffele and Cantlay at plus 700. But all around will be an exciting tournament to watch.
Yeah, and two groups that stand out to me, both at the same price, 16-1, Finau and Champ. Finau doesn't know, look, it's unfortunate, but Finau doesn't know how to close out tournaments. Now with a teammate, could he possibly close it out now that it's not all on his shoulders? And then also Morikawa and Wolf, a couple of young guns. I love that. You know, up-and-comers, perhaps a little hungrier than the field. They love to be a little 1-2 punch. I think that could be cool as well. Both of them at 16-1. I'll have my eyes on both groups. I think it's, again, pretty cool event here at the York Classic.
Yeah. It's definitely a cool event. I feel like if I was a golfer, though, and I was one of the best in the world and my partner didn't do well, I'd be a little bit annoyed. But nonetheless, we'll be talking about this come Monday morning. Let's talk about Major League Baseball. Your Yankees finally getting a win 3-1 over the Braves. Wanted to start off with that. Claps all around. Happy for you, Kev, this morning. I can't really make any comments because the Phillies lost two straight games against the Giants. But why don't, take it. Mm-hmm. Go. Run with it. I know you want to say whatever you want to say.
I'm so happy. It was so great. But let's be honest here. What a bunch of nonsense. I mean, the Yanks loaded the bases, and they scored two runs thanks to one, a wild pitch, and then a walk while the bases were loaded again. I mean, they did nothing. They did absolutely nothing. The Braves lost the game. The Yankees didn't win it, but I don't care. They needed a win. They needed this momentum. And that was, I mean, that was big. It really, really was. So it's, you now hope that we can build a little momentum here. Results for the Yankees. But I got to tell you, you know, my dad is as big of a Yankee fan as I know. Last night, finish up a little in-play sports tonight. Dad, what do you think? Yanks get the job done? He goes, what a disgrace. What a disgrace. Wild pitch and all. He didn't even want it. He's, I would have rather than lost. He was livid about this team. Fair enough. I was glad to see him win. Because also, I did bet in life. I had to. I'm like, you know what? They can't lose this game, which is a terrible way to bet. That never works out. It worked out this time. Luckily, great, great result for the Yanks. I'm buzzing.
Well, do you think that the Yankees will be able to build on that momentum win today? Right now on the FanDuel Sportsbook for their matchup, they are minus 126 on the money line. The total at 9 against the Braves. Anderson on the mound. Kluber on the mound for the Yankees.
Yeah, look, I mean, let's not go crazy, right? I mean, two in a row, boy, would that be something. Here's what we got to talk about, though, is a total of 9. the Yankees are not scoring a lot of runs. Mm-hmm. Atlanta's without Ronald Acuña right now. At least they were yesterday, probably will be again today. The Yankees are a team we look at, and we're like, oh, a lot of runs, a lot of pop in the lineup, and we're typically warning about overs. It's just not been the case this year. I wonder if an under 9 runs could be the play with Yanks Braves.
Yeah, interesting there. Now let's talk about my Phillies. We'll switch it over to a more negative note. The Giants last night winning 10-7 after the Giants shut them out the game before. Now, right now in the FanDuel Sportsbook, these two teams are playing at 1 p.m. today Eastern, so we'll have an early game there. Hopefully it won't be a disappointing afternoon. Right now the Phillies are -124 favorite to win this, as they've been favored in basically all the other games, and the total at 8.5. Which would you play this game?
Well, first of all, I probably won't play it because I'm still furious at both of these teams. The game that the Phillies lost 2-0, I bet 3 different overs in that game and lost all of them. And then they show up the next day.
Try to regain their money, make it back, and then it just keeps going down the rabbit hole.
Absolutely. You're like, oh, they can't. I mean, it can't be that bad, right? Yeah, well, all right. Listen, maybe I'll lose the pregame, but I'll come in 2 in-game winners. No problem here. I mean, 2-0, what a loser, what a stinker. They come out the next day, 17 total runs. A very disrespectful performance from them after what they did yesterday, but a disaster performance from the Phils. The bullpen that they had actually started to trust, multiple 3-run shots, sees them lose that game 10-7. A 10-2 run to close things out from the Giants is wild. I struggle to think that San Fran comes in, though, and sweeps the Phils. I would lean towards Philadelphia at -124.
All right, stay with us here, guys, on the early line. Coming next, we're going to talk about the NFL draft. Stay with us.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to the early line. Kevin and I want to talk about the NFL draft because that is coming up. And like we've been talking about, it's really important for you to read multiple mock drafts. Do not read one of them and then go on the FanDuel Sportsbook and just place these bets based on one person's mock draft. Kevin and I are going to go through one person's mock draft. But again, this is all just what one person thinks. We're not saying this is the end all be all. We want to do the top takeaways from the NFL Network's Peters Schrager's mock draft. So, Kev, we'll talk about the first takeaway that you had. Penny Sewell to be picked by the Bengals on the FanDuel Sportsbook right now. The first offensive lineman for him, -600 on the FanDuel Sportsbook for him to go first. So do you think the Bengals will be taking him at this pick?
Yeah, I absolutely do. And I'll just reiterate your point here, right? We don't want to follow just one mock, but I think it's valuable to kind of go through the exercise here of taking one of these drafts. What stands out? What jumps off the page? How could we then take that to the betting markets? What value is there? Do we agree? So I think that's why this is a fun exercise for us. And Schrager, who's a great NFL reporter, is exactly that, a reporter. This isn't a guy that's in there, and I don't mean this, you know, as a negative. He's not in there grinding, breaking down film, breaking down tape. That's not what we're looking for right here. We want people that are sourced, inside knowledge of what he believes and what he's hearing these teams will do. That's why I think it's the perfect mock for us to break down. So as you said, first takeaway, Penny Sewell comes off the board at 5 to the Cincinnati Bengals. And in this, you know, write-up, he said that everything he hears is they will draft someone to protect Joe Burrow. It makes sense. Burrow is the man. Burrow is the guy for this team. Last year ends in injury because that offensive line could not protect him. So you bring up the market, Aaron, first offensive lineman off the board. Not enough, you know, way too much juice there for us to be laying. How about under 5.5 draft position for Penny Sewell at +128? A little plus money for a pick that makes sense and insiders hearing it. You can find plenty of mock drafts that might point you in the direction of Penny Sewell coming off the board for the Bengals. I love that we're getting it at plus money. This stood out to me right off the bat when we were going through Schrager's mock here. And there's an easy way to correlate what he's hearing, what we're seeing, into a pick on the FanDuel Sportsbook.
Yeah, and a lot of other mock drafts, just to play devil's advocate here, have linked this pick for the Bengals to Ja'Marr Chase, just given that he did play at LSU with him. Just in a, for reference, Ja'Marr Chase -950 to be the first wide receiver drafted off the board. Another pick on the FanDuel Sportsbook that won't provide you the best value, but Penei Sewell was one of the takeaways from there. Another top takeaway, Panthers still to take a quarterback despite having Sam Darnold, of course, with that number 8 pick. He has Justin Fields potentially going, which would then obviously you would take into account how many quarterbacks are going to go off the board in that first round. What do you think of the Panthers potentially doing this?
Absolutely, Aaron. I mean, that we talk about, you know, quarterbacks coming off of the board, but also if the Panthers are willing to go quarterback, that impacts then a lot of other players' possible draft position, right? Someone like Micah Parsons, someone like Rashawn Slater. That's the trickle-down effect of Carolina still being willing to take a quarterback. Look at a guy like Rashawn Slater, over under 8.5 draft position. He is an option for the Panthers. But again, if a quarterback is going to fall, then they won't need him. Justin Fields' draft position is 3.5. You keep going through the quarterbacks. Trey Lance is 6.5 here. So the Panthers being willing to take a quarterback certainly does have a ripple effect. The question that I leave with, though, Aaron, is how many of the quarterbacks are they willing to take? Is it a situation in which Carolina is hopeful that one of the three, Mac, Justin Fields, and Trey Lance, make it to them? Or are they like, listen, if it's Field, we're in. If it's any other quarterback, though, we're out. That's what we're still trying to figure out with Carolina.
Yeah, and I think overall the point is that we're still trying to figure a lot of these things out. Of course, some of this stuff just happens during the draft. Obviously, people are going to be moving around. And one of the points here was for the Eagles to trade down. It's interesting. He has Barrett Tucker going offensive lineman from USC, opposed to, let's say, a lot of the reports that I've read about the Philadelphia Eagles, obviously taking a wide receiver, potentially Devonta Smith or Jalen Waddle. So something to keep in mind. But he has the Eagles needing an offensive lineman,
which I certainly could see. I think the big takeaway, though, for me was the Eagles trading down, especially in this mock draft that saw Devonta Smith still available at 12. Be quite honest, as a Birds fan, I hated seeing this. I really am tired of elite no-brainer wide receiver talent being on the board and the Eagles passing on it. Bang the table for DK Metcalf. Justin Jefferson was a no-brainer. We come away with J.J. Arcega-Whiteside and Jalen Reagor. Is Devonta Smith is on the board and the Eagles trade out? It could be possible. And he stressed that the Eagles are a team people think could trade up, but he really believes they are a prime trade-down candidate looking to see if they could possibly nab an additional first-round pick going into the 2022 NFL draft. Makes sense, though. When you really contemplate all of this, a team that wants to be set up for the future. So the Eagles being willing to trade down, again, where does that impact? It means that if you start to see some talent slipping, the 12 might be as far as they could fall. Because a team like, say, the Cardinals that might want one of the wide receivers, a team like the Patriots that perhaps maybe wants to grab a quarterback, if one of the elite corners fall to 12, that might be a position in which teams could come up and stop the fall and trade with the Eagles.
Yeah, and like you said, that makes sense to a lot of degrees, but we both know that the Philadelphia Eagles, in terms of the draft, sometimes just don't make sense. Another thing, biggest takeaway from this, Jalen Phillips, first defensive lineman off the board. Now, Phillips has also been linked to the Vikings. Some say that he's not worth the risk in the top 20 picks, but he is +230 out of Miami to do this after we have Payne from the Wolverines at -145.
Yeah, and that's one of the easy takeaways for me when going through this is that Jalen Phillips comes off the board as the first defensive lineman because that's a +230 number there. Again, Kwity Paye to be -145. If you go through these first X position to come off the board, there's so much minus money, right? Surtain, -300, right? In the safety market, -450. I mean, where are you finding value? The only other one, we'll talk about it in a moment, is running back, right? So If you could really see a scenario, find enough mock drafts that suggest Jalen Phillips comes off the board at plus 230, that becomes then a very, very interesting option in my eyes. What stood out as well, Quiddy Pay out of Michigan wasn't even the second defensive lineman off the board in this specific mock draft. I think that shows to me that a lot of people are probably of separate minds when it comes to this defensive line class. Not one guy clearly out in front of everybody else. It's reflected in the odds, but it means then grab plus money. Jalen Phillips, Gregory Rousseau, we're hearing this morning, 100% believes that he's going to be a first-round selection this year from his agent, Drew Rosenhaus. I think you're going to want to look for plus money, and Schrager here reporting Jalen Phillips has a great chance to be the first defensive lineman off the board at plus 230. That's how you can correlate a mock to a bet.
Yeah, and obviously better value there, but like you said, there's not just one clear front runner and that first defensive lineman off the board. Let's also talk about the first running back off the board. He has Travis Etienne, who is right now in the FanDuel Sportsbook, plus 150 out of Clemson behind Najee Harris at minus 170. In his four-year career, he picked up 4,952 rushing yards and over 1,100 receiving yards and 78 total touchdowns. He has him coming off before Najee Harris. Do you agree with this?
Everything about this surprised me. And this is where we then talk about, just because you see it in a mock, we're not sat here saying, oh, see, free money at ETN, first running back off the board, but it was a takeaway. I couldn't believe this. Not only that he was the first running back off the board, but more importantly, who was selecting him? Washington? Going with Travis Etienne, a running back at 19? I mean, that is, that no way. It couldn't be. It really, really surprised me to see that move there. But even if I think Najee Harris comes off the board minus 170 first running back, right? I don't really want to lay minus 170. I have no intention of doing that. We continue to talk about player over-unders. Travis Etienne's over-under, Aaron, is 35.5 on the FanDuel Sportsbook. If there's a chance this guy goes in the top 20, well, 35.5 then has to be attractive. Even if Najee's going to be the first one off the board, maybe both of these guys end up going in the first round. Travis Etienne under 35.5 is a bet I'd be more likely to make on the heels of some of the information that Peter Schrager is providing us versus first running back off the board.
Yeah, and the player over-under seem to have a lot more value as opposed to the player positions, round one totals, overall picks just in general. So obviously you can take a lot of takeaways from these mock drafts, but I want to quickly kind of just talk about the top 10 overall picks. We know the Jags, Lawrence, Jets, Zach Wilson, 49ers, Fields, but then the question marks are around the Falcons with that number 4 pick, with the Dolphins at number 6 because they've been linked to potentially giving their pick or trading it. Then the Lions potentially could trade, seen that in a lot of mock drafts, especially with the Patriots, to kind of move up there and get a quarterback. Then that would really change what happens with the Broncos should they need to take a QB. I know this person thinks it's going to be Fields, but potentially they could get somebody else. But all these other ones from 10 to 20 could also be jumbled around. So still a lot of things to sort out before we have a solidified who's going at what number before the NFL draft.
We're hearing a lot about potential trades. We'll talk about that after the break. A couple more takeaways from this Schrager mock draft. Also, one bet that I'm starting to maybe see some value on, and a move yesterday that was predicted on the early line.
Stay with us here on the early line. We'll be right back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Listening to the early line on Sports Grid on SiriusXM channel 204. For Kevin Walsh, I'm Aaron Dolan. Happy Wednesday, everybody. In our previous segment, we were talking about the five takeaways from NFL Network's Peter Schrager's mock draft. Of course, we told you, do not only read one mock draft, read multiple. But Kev, just overall, wanted to ask you any other takeaways from this draft that you wanted to mention before we move on.
Yeah, just a couple of other notes. One, he mentioned Dallas might look to grab offensive tackle. We've talked about it. I'm not sure if we're going to still get these offense or defense markets that we got last year, but if we do, Dallas would likely be plus money to take offense. I still think that's live. The other one, And again, these are the kind of notes from a mock draft that stick with you. He was basically bold, italicized, underline. The New York Giants are looking at corner. A lot of times I feel like the Giants are linked to one of the falling wide receivers there. He made it very clear that either Patrick Surtain or J.C. Horn could be the pick. Again, he wrote, you know, writing in this, would not be surprised if they took a corner over a wide receiver, offensive tackle, or pass rusher. And then he wrote, would not be surprised at all. I think that's something important for us to keep tabs on then. You know, we are very likely going to get more Giant-specific markets here, especially those wagering on the Jersey FanDuel Sportsbook side of things. Cornerback, way more of an option, perhaps, than we initially thought.
And before we move on and get into some of the markets that are available on the FanDuel Sportsbook, Kev, I just wanted to ask you, generally speaking, how are you going about betting in this besides just reading some of these mock drafts? Are you creating your own mock draft in hopes that you're going to, you know, pick which teams are going to potentially trade up after everything you've read, or are you going a different route?
I personally always try and create mock drafts. I'll be honest. So when I was still in college, I often would do live NFL draft shows and mock drafts and previews the whole way. I love the NFL draft. And this is before I even knew that you could bet on the NFL draft. So this has always just been something that I've really, really enjoyed covering and breaking down. What I think you try and do is you try and compare as many different things as possible. I'll tell you this, we're going to get into it, not just yet. There's one bet on the board that I last night tried to grab as many examples as possible to see if I could justify a certain selection. And what I mean by that is I took about six or seven mocks and see where things added up. I'll also say I am drawn towards things that have odds that are very bettable, okay? I know some folks out there like laying the juice, not my style. And I think for a lot of you out there, probably not your style as well. I'm not sure how many people are looking to lay minus 300 or even say a minus 250 price there. You can win those bets. You absolutely can. But things that check in at, you know, a minus 118. All right, maybe a minus 130. How about a plus money? Love when we can find a plus money winner. That's why Penny Sewell jumps out to me under 5.5 at plus 128. You try and combine your takes, what you're reading, what you're hearing, and where the value is on the board.
For sure. So let's get into some of the draft markets that are available on the FanDuel Sportsbook. One that we talked about yesterday, we have QB draft positions. Davis Mills, it was at 73.5. It's now moved to 68.5. So clearly some people listening to us here on the early line. Kev, why do you think that number has come down, and do you think it will continue to come down?
Well, look, credit to you out there if you were listening and betting. And this is, it's always nice though when a plan comes together, isn't it, Just? It's not that we said the 73.5 draft position for Davis Mills would move with juice. We said that it would move draft positions, multiple draft positions, and already it moved a full five from 73.5 to 68.5. I saw a mock yesterday that said Davis Mills was going to go 15. 15. This number is 68.5. If you missed it yesterday at 73.5, you probably could still bet it at 68.5. I think Davis Mills going in the first two rounds is very, very likely. Again, not based on what I think of the player, what I think of the talent, but based on what you hear, he seems to have a massive leg up to be the sixth quarterback off the board. There's some chatter about Tampa Bay considering quarterback at 32. I think Davis Mills, even at 68.5, makes some sense, but this is why you watch the early line. There's folks out there now with under 73.5 in their pocket.
Yep. No, and there's some markets that obviously you want to start betting in now because, I mean, that's a big jump overnight. So if you can get some of those early lines, even though it's not technically going to happen tonight, just in the future, you want to try to jump on those. Another market we wanted to talk about, the first offensive lineman totals in the first round, under 6.5, or excuse me, the totals at 6.5. But Kev, I know you'd mentioned potentially taking the under there. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I'm actually the running backs and the wide receivers. like minus 225. Like, do we see the, like, these numbers are just so monstrous. The tight end market. We can't bet on this stuff. I mean, you can, but it's, again, it's not for everybody. So when we look at this offensive lineman here, over under 6.5, minus 118 to the over, minus 108 to the under, clearly this is the market that there is the most uncertainty around in terms of what is and what is not available. And I peeled through yesterday a bunch of different mock drafts to get a sense of what is likely. We start with Schrager's. Only 5 offensive linemen in round number 1. Only 5 of them, all right? Mm. I continue to go. I had a Sports Illustrated one that had 6, okay? Still under. 2 from CBS, one with 5, another with 4 offensive linemen. I went over to the Draft Network, one with 6. One ended up having 7. Okay, I found a 7 out there. What about Daniel Jeremiah, one of the most notable names when it comes out there to mock drafts? Only 6 of the NFL Network. How about Mel Kiper? Mel Kiper's most recent mock draft. Only 5 offensive linemen. So about 6 or 7 different mock drafts that I was continuing to follow that offered us under 6.5. I found only 1 7, no 8s, a 4, and a bunch of 5s. So to me, it feels way more likely that there's only 5 offensive linemen drafted than even 7, and we're getting a number at 6.5 and better juice towards the under. I think you click this under 6.5 number here. I think you're going to get the best of that number. I think you're going to get the best of that juice. A great opportunity. Mm-hmm. And if you want a sense too, because this is always good, get a sense who are the names that you're following. There are 4 offensive linemen who's over under draft positions that you can bet. Vera Tucker, Darashaw, mm-hmm. Sewell, Slater. All 4 of them are going to go in round number 1. Okay. Then Tevin Jenkins out of Oklahoma State is likely your 5th. But that's now when we get into the a little bit of breathing room there. Okay. Alex Leatherwood, Landon Dickerson. There's a couple of names, but not with the consistency that you would need to bet over on that 6.5. So I think under 6.5 mm-hmm. offensive lineman, Aaron, really, really palatable juice. I think it's a nice play.
Let's also switch it over to the positions, because I know we also wanted to talk about the running back. There's obviously value there. There's also value in terms of positions for the first defensive lineman drafted. So we'll start with the running backs. Now, only 8 have been selected in the first round over the last 5 drafts combined, with Clyde Edwards-Helaire being the lone first round running in 2020. So do you find any interest in these markets here of where you could potentially find more value in just the overall positions and who's going to be taken first?
So I think right now, one of the things that jumps out to me that you just mentioned there is how few running backs have gone in round number 1 in recent history. A running back position, let's call it what it is. It has become increasingly less valuable. At least it's become less valuable to pay a high-end running back. You still want talented players at the position. There just seems to be so many that are interchangeable. But with that being said, Najee Harris and Travis Etienne have a great chance to go in round number 1. Over half running back at minus 225. I think that's going to win. I don't really want to lay minus 225. What I want is over 1.5 running backs drafted in round number 1. I want a different line with better juice at plus money, and I want odds on both Etienne and Najee Harris to go in round number 1, because these two feel like they're coming in with more juice in recent memory than some of these other backs. And I think part of that has to do with ETN, national champion, Clemson, college football playoff, Najee Harris, national champion, college football playoff. Big name recognition for both of those guys. I think that helps when you're trying to add to your profile as a back mm-hmm. trying to go in round 1. So that's what I'm going to be looking for, Aaron. Odds for those two guys to be going off the board in the first round.
Yeah, and some odds that I saw that shifted overnight. We have the first wide receiver drafted, Devonta Smith and Jalen Waddle were both at plus 750, but now Jalen Waddle is 10-1, while Ja'Marr Chase, of course, the clear favorite at minus 950. So obviously, we know that this market, it seems like Ja'Marr Chase is going to go first, but is there any chance that the Alabama running back duos could potentially jump him in any shape, way, or form? Or could you be surprised by some of these markets that you think don't have any value whatsoever, and then come the draft, is something totally different?
100%. Absolutely. Here's the deal, right? Why do we keep talking about Ja'Marr Chase to the Bengals? Why? Joe Burrow, right? LSU. They play together. Who picks sixth? The Dolphins. Who's their quarterback? Tua. Where'd Tua go? Bama. Who'd he throw to at Bama? Devonta Smith and Jalen Waddle. If Ja'Marr Chase isn't off of the board by the time the Dolphins are picking at six, there is no guarantee that they take Ja'Marr Chase over a couple of Tua's former teammates. You cannot subscribe to the theory that Ja'Marr Chase is the pick at five because of LSU and the connection with Burrow, and then hand wave it and ignore it when it comes to Devonta Smith or Jalen Waddle coming off the board here at the sixth pick. And Aaron, that's why I think the Dolphins want to trade back. Because I think they want one of the Bama wide receivers to give to Tua Tagovailoa. And I don't think that they, I think they know that Ja'Marr is the more coveted wide receiver around the league. So they'd rather move back and wait, knowing that they don't need to take the first wide receiver. But also, we've seen this plenty of times. A lot of teams want to trade back. Doesn't mean teams want to trade up. Sometimes they go, no, we don't have to go anywhere. Sit there, draft. We're fine. Our options will be on the board. If this draft plays out, okay, Lawrence, Wilson, let's say Fields, Pitts, and Sewell, and the Dolphins are on the board at six, and none of the wide receivers have gone, Devonta Smith and Jalen Waddle are both absolutely live to be the first wide receiver off the board.
Yeah, and I mean, both of these wide receivers are obviously incredible, but if you had to pick one of those players to go with the Dolphins, I feel like the surrounding conversation about Devonta Smith is just that he's too small.
Yeah, you know what? I don't like that, though. The guy's balled out at every level. Did this with Trae Young.
Yes, I agree with you.
All-star, all-NBA teams. Devonta Smith is going to be good at the next level. I have no doubt about that.
We'll be right back after the break. Stay with us.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back to the Early Line. Now, behind the scenes, sometimes I feel like that should be the show because that's when the best conversations happen, and we like to dish on each other for the different teams that we like in the NFL. And considering hostile. That the Bengals put out, what did you say again?
Hostile environment.
Hostile, yeah. It really is because our producer Brian likes the Dallas Cowboys. We obviously like the Eagles. James, of course, I forget which team in the NFL that he actually likes, but nonetheless.
Doesn't even like a good team, irrelevant.
James, you're going to throw me into my ear really quickly? What is it? Oh, the Chiefs.
Kansas City Chiefs. Fan.
Duh. Sorry. Sorry. That's my bad.
Super Bowl losers.
Sorry. All right. Taking it back here. The Bengals, they released what their uniforms are going to look like. Joe Burrow, I mean, he looks pretty tremendous in that in those pictures that came out. But we want to give our favorite uniforms that are available right now in the NFL. I'm going to go with my favorite ones. I think that the New Orleans Saints, they just look so slick when they wear all white or all black. I think those would be my favorite uniforms. Or if I was watching a game, I think it's most aesthetically pleasing. But Kev, what's your favorite uniforms?
Yeah, Saints have a good option. Let me just say, Chiefs and I are on good terms. James and I are not, though. Slandered the Eagles Super Bowl. Insane move from him. But the Chiefs and I, as a fan base for the most part, still on good terms. As far as the favorite uniforms go, I think the Bengals are sweet. I'll say that. I think the Niners have a great, great classic look. Yeah. I think if I were to wear one, obviously outside of a sweet Birds jersey, love the midnight green, always rocks. I love the black alternates. I think the Chargers with the powder blue. Listen, I had an old Sean Merriman jersey when I was younger, and I felt like the powder blue really made my eyes pop. So I think a little Chargers powder blue looks pretty good on KW. So I would put that pretty high up the board.
And it's telling that Kevin's taking that. As I just said, one of my least favorite is the Chargers, which now I'm just putting my foot in my mouth here. But yeah, all around there's some great jerseys. But you make a lot of great points there. I mean, I think one of the most classics, though, is probably the Patriots, just because of the colors and the American flag and things like that. But no, I'm not going to say the Dallas Cowboys
stink out loud. That
America's
team stinks. That franchise stinks.
They're clearly not America's team.
Yeah, get them out of there. Cowboys are terrible. They're going to be terrible this year. Their defense is not good. Going to make a terrible pick at 10. Get Dallas out of here.
We'll see you tomorrow morning here on the Early Line.
Sports info
is everywhere.
We cut through all the clutter and bring you actionable insights and expert perspectives every single day.